This is Tucker Blair of Baseball Prospectus, and you are listening to the Nats GM Show.
Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 18 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available from the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com. My special guest this week is Jordan Garoche. Jordan is a member of the Baseball Prospectus Prospect Team and is a former lead writer at Bless You Boys, the top Detroit Tigers prospect site on the net. A former pitcher at Indiana University, Jordan is one of the top up-and-coming player evaluators around, and I'm excited to talk prospects with him today. Jordan, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
I was fortunate enough to get to meet Jordan at the BP event in June, and over a couple of adult beverages, he and I broke down pretty much every player in what felt like the minor leagues. So I'm excited to get you on today and talk some prospects.
Definitely, man. Looking forward to it.
So first place I want to start is just have you kind of introduce yourself a little bit to the audience and your career trajectory to getting to work with BP.
Absolutely. So, you know, as you said, my name is Jordan Garoche, and I have been writing about and, you know, kind of evaluating prospects for a few years now. As you said, I went to Indiana University. I graduated in 2012. And, you know, I went there to play baseball and be a pitcher, but unfortunately, my shoulder disagreed with my assessment of continuing my career. So, in 2009, I tore my labrum and, I had to be a regular student at IU, which, to be honest, ended up being a little bit more fun anyway.
Right.
Although, the program's pretty good there, so.
Yeah, Indiana's turned out some great players in the last couple of years. Great point. Absolutely.
Yeah, they did. They put out, you know, Blake Monar, Josh Fagley. Eric Arnett was kind of a bust of a first rounder, but, you know, he was highly regarded as well. Alex Dickerson.
The program is
very good.
I was in love with Matt Bayshore a couple of years ago. I thought he was going to be an absolute stud. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tracy Smith was you know, a really nice guy, good recruiter, and, you know, they basically went after a lot of California kids that were a little bit under-recruited by the California school, and they brought them over to the Midwest, and it ended up, you know, doing really well for them, and, you know, I wish them all the best of luck. So, yeah, I mean, it was an interesting experience, you know, being a part of that team for a little while before I ended up getting hurt. But from there, you know, I wanted to continue giving back to the game, and, you know, I started going to minor league games, to, you know, just kind of see what was going on, and I ended up really liking it. So I started writing about Tigers guys, and from there, last year, you know, around this time, actually more or less September of 2013, I applied to write for BP, and, you know, Jason Parks, who was running the site at that time, wanted to, you know, bring me on. So from there, you know, joined the BP team as an intern, and just, you know, kind of took the bull by the horns and went to a lot of games this past summer, went to spring training in February, March of this year. And, you know, I've advanced a little bit at the site, and, you know, I'm contributing quite a bit at this point, and I'm very happy to be there.
Yeah, I'm a big, big fan of your work. And one article in particular that I wanted to ask you about, I think you wrote maybe a month ago, 6 weeks, something about that way, How I Learned to Scout. Personally, I thought it was one of the best pieces on BP all year, and I just kind of want to introduce the piece and have you introduce it as well, because I just thought it was a terrific read.
Sure. So, you know, I was asked by Jason to kind of, you know, introduce myself a little bit to you know, the BP readers, because, you know, I am going to be writing quite a bit for the site, you know, going forward here, especially this off season, and, you know, the next couple of years, hopefully. So, you know, he basically just said, hey, you know, why don't you write about how you kind of got into scouting or, you know, player evaluation and what your personal experience has been like and, you know, who some of your mentors have been. And, you know, from there, I, you know, just kind of put pen to paper. And after quite a few drafts, I you know, turned out with something that was remotely readable, which is good. So, you know, I enjoyed writing the piece. It's hard, you know, to write about something that is very personal like that, as opposed to, you know, just penning a scouting report. I think that that's actually easier to do, you know, as opposed to something that kind of comes from the heart, like what I wrote. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it wasn't the first sentence in the article, it was the second, is, you know, your dad saying something to the effect of, you know, try to be the dumbest person in the room because you could learn something. And that really struck a chord with me about scouting, because you don't want to be the smartest guy around. You want to be the dumbest person in the group learning.
Definitely. I mean, look, I'm a 24-year-old guy, so there are people who have underwear that are older than me, especially that are cousins, you know, so... I try to soak up as much knowledge as I can from these people, because, you know, they have quite a bit to give, and they've been around the game for a long time. So, you know, while I do think that I have a good base of knowledge, it's definitely important for me to, you know, take something from anyone in baseball that I meet, and, you know, hopefully I can learn something from them and apply it to, you know, my writing and just, you know, the way that I view the game in general.
Yeah, I think it's a free article, if I have that correct, but definitely go search for it. It's How I Learned to Scout on BP. Like I said, it was one of my favorite articles of the year, so definitely check it out. I want to now transition a little bit, if I can, and start talking some players with you and pick your brain, because you certainly know, particularly pitching. So first player I'd like to ask you about is starting with Baltimore Orioles prospect Hunter Harvey. You wrote a nice piece on him earlier in the year. I saw him early in the season, but I haven't seen him, you know, I probably haven't seen him since May or so. Kind of your opinion on that, Hunter Harvey, and thoughts going forward?
Sure. So, you know, obviously, you know, there were some injury issues, but, you know, at the end of the day, you're looking at a young kid with plenty of polish, some very good raw stuff. Obviously, he's going to have to take some steps forward with the changeup, which is a field pitch. So, you know, it should be interesting to see how that goes. But, you know, the fastball, curveball are very good right now. I had the chance to see him at the Futures game, and, you know, I thought that while the arm worked well, at the same time there was kind of some stab and some weird stuff going on in the back. So, you know, I wonder if the Orioles are going to clean that up a little bit going forward, especially with, you know, the arm injury that he suffered to end his season. I would not be surprised if they cleaned him up mechanically, but, you know, for the most part, I mean, it's a very exciting arm. It's someone who has, you know, probably not ace upside, but, you know, certainly number two, number three upside, and, you know, he's got some bat-missing stuff, and I'm interested to see how he develops here in the next couple of years. I think that they're going to, you know, bring him along relatively slowly. I wouldn't expect to see him in the major leagues until, you know, potentially 2017-ish.
That sounds good. So so you don't think he's going to be a reliever at all like his father? You think he's a pure starter all the way?
I mean, I think that, you know, they obviously invested quite a bit in him from a draft standpoint, and he has, you know, the raw stuff to start. So, you know, for me to say that a kid like that is going to be a reliever is kind of a shot in the dark, just because, you know, I know that the organization is going to want to keep him as a starter, and hopefully, you know, they don't give him the Gausman treatment, and they just, you know, kind of let him work with what's comfortable for him and build up his innings and, you know, get him to the major leagues as a starting pitcher.
Well, and he made some nice adjustments after the draft, I guess, last year. So, like you say, maybe he is coachable enough that they can clean up that arm action, you know, going forward. So, shifting now, I want to talk a little bit Nationals prospects and their system. First player I want to ask you about is Michael Taylor. He could, you know, replace Denard Span here in 2015, whether it's the beginning of the year or sometime during the season. Thoughts on his future, you know, and his future profile?
Sure. So, you know, I think that he ultimately has a much higher upside than Denard Span does, but at the same time, you know, you're looking at a team like Washington that is trying to win, you know, basically the World Series next year and in the next couple of years. I mean, all their core guys are around for now. You know, Fister's going to be up after 15. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they picked up Span's option and they went into the season with Taylor as, you know, kind of the extra outfielder. and I kind of view him as a better contingency plan for 15 as opposed to someone who's going to go out there and get everyday reps. But in general, you know, the profile is good. I mean, he looks like he could be a first division center fielder. Obviously, there's some contact issues there, but, you know, the swing's pretty, and he's obviously a pretty athletic guy, has some power potential. And, you know, I like what he brings. I'm just not sure that, you know, for a team like Washington, you know that you have a proven commodity in Span who, you know, obviously isn't going to hit for much power or, you know, walk a whole bunch. But at the same time, you know, he's not going to be a detriment to your team, and he did play pretty well this year.
Yeah, I mean, he was a four-win player this year and was, you know, pretty awful for the first 6 weeks of the year. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in center field because Souza's there as well. There's another name. Thoughts on Steven Souza?
Well, you know, I think that he's going to be able to hit a little bit. I just don't think that you're looking at an everyday guy. I mean, he's already in his mid-20s. He's probably best suited as kind of a utility, you know, outfielder type guy who can, you know, probably hit, I don't know, maybe 15 homers in about 400 to, you know, 450 at-bats and is a decent little fourth outfielder.
Yeah, well, that would be a pretty nice career for him, you know, considering he was a third-round pick, you know, goodness, 8-9 years ago, 2007 out of Washington. So if I can now ask you a couple of pitchers that I want to particularly dissect and have your opinions on. Giolito gets most of the recognition in the system, but two names that I want to hear a little more about from you are A.J. Cole and Ronaldo Lopez.
Sure. So, you know, I think that when you're talking about you know, those three pitchers, I think that it's important to note that Giolito's upside is far and away greater than both of those two others. So he's kind of in a tier by himself, and then, you know, there's probably Cole's tier because he's obviously much closer to the major leagues and closer to being a finished product than you got Lopez. So, you know, in terms of Cole, you know, he's a low to mid-90s arm, and you know, the secondary stuff seems to be coming along, but at the end of the day, I think that it's going to come down to fastball command for him. And, you know, the arm works well, and I think that he's still, you know, a top somewhere between 30 and 40 prospect that's around where he's going to be, you know, if I had to guess for the BP Top 101. But, you know, now is basically the time for him to kind of put up or shut up, and I'm interested to see if he, you know, or how many innings he throws next year in the major leagues. I think that you know, you could see him a bit.
Yeah, in an ideal world, do you think he starts, you know, in Syracuse AAA at the beginning of the year and then, you know, maybe mid-season gets up, or do you think he's ready now?
I think that it's going to kind of depend on, you know, what goes on kind of this off-season, obviously with the back of the Nationals rotation. You know, you've got Roark, and you've got, you know, obviously Zimmerman, Gonzalez, Strasburg, and Fister, too, so... You know, I'm interested to see if they you know, go back with Roark. I don't understand why they wouldn't, and kind of keep Cole waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And they still have Trine in there and a couple of other arms that, you know, can give them some innings too. So I would like to get your opinion on Ronaldo Lopez is a player that is, you know, flying up the Nationals ratings and prospect lists, but probably hasn't gotten much love on my show just because he has broken out so much. Can you kind of introduce him a little bit to the audience and your thoughts?
Sure. So, you know, he's kind of a smallish guy, around 6'1". I believe that he had some injury issues, and he kind of came back onto the scene this year throwing harder than ever before. I believe that one of our evaluators, Tucker Blair, liked him quite a bit. And
yeah, I think man crush would be fair to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to at least pretend to tame it down here for a second. But Tucker feels about him like you probably shouldn't feel for a baseball player. I think that he you know, writes his name in his notebook with little hearts.
Yeah. So, hearts in the eyes. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So. He's a guy who throws, you know, in the mid to high 90s and sits there for virtually the whole game, or at least he did for, you know, around 10 starts or so. The curveball definitely shows some promise. You know, looks like it can be a plus pitch or maybe even a little bit more. And, you know, the changeup, he shows some feel for that as well. So, you know, you're looking at a guy who obviously has a very electric fastball. in the field for two secondary pitches. Now, at the same time, he's not extremely young. I believe he is he 20 or 21?
I think he might even be 21.
Yeah, so, you know, he's 21. He was at, you know, low A this season. And, you know, it's a guy who is still going to take a while to, you know, kind of come to fruition here. And it's not like he has a bunch of innings under his belt. So, you know, it's going to be kind of a slow, gradual, you know, bring along here. And I'm curious, you know, when he eventually does, you know, reach his ceiling, is he still going to be throwing that hard? Just because he is not that big of a guy, and you know, how is the changeup going to come along? But, you know, you did see it kind of come together all at the same time for a smaller Dominican arm like Yordano Ventura. But at the same time, I mean, I think that he is the exception, not necessarily the rule.
Yeah, and as I was saying to you off air, I saw Lopez back in May. You know, in one of the couple times he was in Hagerstown early in the year, and he was, you know, 91, 93, and he was, you know, athletic, but it was certainly nothing like the electricity that, you know, what happened whenever they made a couple of tinkers with his delivery or whatever they did. He came back and he was a completely different pitcher than what I saw, so.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, guys throw harder as it warms up. I would say that going from 91 to 93 to 95 to 98, you know, touching 100 is obviously abnormal, but, you know, guys certainly do, as the season goes along, you know, come up, you know, one, two, or even three ticks. But I would say that's definitely abnormal to go from, you know, kind of that low 90s to that mid-90s touching 100.
Yeah, and that jump makes me concerned because maybe next year he comes back and he doesn't have that same type stuff. Reminds me a little bit of Robbie Ray, actually. Different type of pitcher, but popped up, stuff got way better, and then, you know, Mike Rizzo probably smartly moved him.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been following, obviously, the Tigers for quite some time now, so I had the, I'll call it the pleasure of watching Robbie Ray quite a few times this year, and, you know, I don't know if I see exactly what the Tigers see in him. I think that he is a decent prospect, and you're looking at someone who could be, you know, a number four type guy if the breaking ball comes along or, you know, if you throw a cutter, because obviously the changeup is good, and it does come out of his hand nice for a lefty, but I just don't know where he's going to miss bat.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably his biggest fan when he was with the Nationals, but I was certainly not upset to see him go. He seemed like one of those guys that was overrated as a prospect.
So, oh, yeah.
Which actually kind of
leads... He got pitched before.
Yeah, exactly, who was... Although the numbers didn't say it, he was terrific this year. So, I mean, he was 16 wins, and he was terrific for the Nats. So, which kind of leads into another question... kind of a bigger platform, but is there a player you're kind of higher on in the national system than maybe some, you know, the media or the general consensus, and to the flip side, maybe a player that you're lower on than maybe the consensus as well?
In the national system or general?
Well, actually, I was going to ask in general too, but let's start with the Nat system.
Well, you know, I would say that for, I don't know if people want to hear this, but Giolito, I think that I'm a little bit lower than everyone else on. That doesn't mean that I don't think that he's going to be a top rotation pitcher, but I do think that there are plenty of pitfalls that people just really are not addressing with him. And, you know, while I do think that he, I mean, look, his potential is Cooperstown. I mean, I'm not going to sell it short, but at the same time, you know, the mechanical profile is not good. And, you know, there's certainly the possibility that he ends up as, you know, more of a middle-of-the-rotation starter or someone who is not able to stay healthy for long periods of time. I do worry about the mechanical profile. He's got plenty of arm drag, and he's already got that first, you know, TJ under his belt. And, you know, if he were to blow out again, I think that, you know, coming back the second time is incrementally harder. So, you know, you're really kind of playing with fire there. So I think that there is a little bit more risk than people are willing to address.
I think that's a terrific point. I mean, the arm swing and the stab in the back is not, it doesn't look great, particularly when you see some of these great pitchers like a Jordan Zimmermann or something whose arm swing is so perfect. It doesn't look quite right, like you say.
There was someone who had some video of him. I can't remember where I saw it, but it was super slowed down. And, you know, you could really see exactly how his body worked, and it just was not as natural as you want to see. I mean, the arm was still all the way back down by his lower hip, you know, as he was coming forward. And, you know, obviously it's difficult to, you know, throw 95 miles an hour, you know, if he's throwing 100 pitches, probably 60 times a game. And the stress that puts on your arm is pretty vast. Even, you know, as a 6'5", 230-pound guy.
Yeah, and he's a good, not a great athlete at that size. I mean, he's not the athlete that some are, particularly. I mean, he's a pitcher all the way. So,
definitely.
But to that point, is there somebody in the system that you like maybe a little more than people might, or, you know, the general population?
Yeah, you know, I think that people are sleeping a little bit on Eric Fetty, even though, you know, he obviously was a first-round pick, but, you know, he's kind of a guy that I feel like is forgotten when you kind of start, you know, lifting off the top Nationals prospects. And, you know, the reports I got on him pre-draft were pretty awesome. You know, he's kind of low to mid-90s guy with a really good slider. And the feel for the change is coming along. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit slower of a burn than most college guys are. But at the same time, you know, if he is fully healthy, so, you know, if he can throw a decent amount of innings here in 15, I mean, even if it's, you know, 30 or 40, and then, you know, you work him back in 2016 and he throws 125, you know, to 140 or so innings, I mean, he could be good to go for 2017. I know that the Nationals obviously are good at rehabbing Tommy John guys. I mean, they've got a whole bushel of them, so... You know, with that being said, obviously Tommy John is not a 100% certainty to come back from. But, you know, if he can regain the sharpness that he had before the injury, you're looking at a guy who has, you know, that number two, number three type upside.
Well, and he wouldn't have escaped, what, probably the top eight picks in the draft this year if he hadn't gotten hurt?
Yeah, I would say somewhere between 8 and 12. I mean, it always, sometimes it kind of gets weird with teams picking, you know, guys who... They want to sign for cheap and then go.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good point.
But he would, you know, at the same time, yeah, I would say he had top 12-ish talent.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the Aaron Nola, Kyle Freeland kind of area, talent-wise, I would say. So,
yep.
And that also builds off kind of my next question, just giving you a spot to maybe a player you're higher on in the minor leagues overall than you know, everybody else, and also, you know, on the flip side, somebody you're a little lower on than the rest of the baseball universe?
Sure. So, you know, one guy that I've really tried to promote since, you know, coming to BP is Jake Thompson for the Tigers. And usually I actually like to downplay Tigers prospects, like, you know, Stephen Moya, for instance, who I don't think is going to be an everyday regular. But, you know, Thompson I saw, you know, a couple times last year in 2013, and then I saw him this spring and spring training and a couple of times throughout the season. And I got to tell you, he has really, really progressed as a pitcher. He's, you know, he's kind of a low to mid-90s guy. He's more 91 and 94, works in kind of the 92 range, and he's got a really, really good slider. The changeup is starting to come along, and he's got kind of a curveball that he throws every once in a while that's kind of flicking in there for a strike. It's not a great pitch, but it's just kind of a change of eye level and, you know, change of a perception pitch. And he pounds the zone pretty well, especially for a young kid. And I think he's got a pretty good chance of being, you know, low number three, high number four starter. And, I he's one of those guys I just, you know, genuinely like. And, you know, I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, that's a pretty nice profile. I mean, that's a $14 million a year pitcher. Jeez. So
yeah, no, it is. I would agree. I think that he's someone who's, you know, going to miss bats. He's going to get ground balls, and, you know, in general, he's a good pitcher. You know, I worry a little bit about you know, kind of a stiff front landing leg, and he does use a lot of torque. In general, it is a torque heavy profile, but, you know, if you go watch him, I mean, the slider is definitely a plus pitch at the major league level. I could see it even being a little bit more. So he does have that in his back pocket whenever he needs it. I mean, it's kind of like his pacifier, if you will. So yeah, I mean, I like him quite a bit.
And how about somebody you're lower on than you know, the rest of baseball?
I would say that Aaron Sanchez is someone I'm a little bit lower on.
Good name.
Say that again?
I just said good name. That's a good name.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of a general BP stance for whatever reason. But, you know, at the same time, I definitely understand it. I have plenty of reservations about him, and it's not necessarily anything that he's done, but it's just kind of been the upbringing in general. I mean, you're looking at a guy who, you know, who rarely gets into the sixth inning, you know, until the last, I would say, maybe 35-ish starts of his minor league career, he's really, you know, gotten into the sixth inning. And that is not necessarily his fault. It's because they really only let him go about 75 pitches at a time. So you're looking at a guy who, you know, I don't really know if he's going to be able to get out in the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, or the eighth inning, you know, at any point in his career, just because I haven't seen it. And, you know, at the same time, I mean, the changeup is still barely usable. I mean, in relief, he's you know, fastball, curveball, which, you know, he would be a damn good closer. I mean, don't get me wrong, but, you know, people were expecting a top-of-the-rotation profile here. I mean, you know, maybe even a potential ace because, you know, the fastball and curveball are so good and it comes out of his arm, you know, really easy. But, you know, at the end of the day, I do have reservations about him as a starter, and I think that, you know, you're looking at a guy who is more of a mid to potential back of the rotation type profile as opposed to a top of the rotation one.
Yeah, that's a great call. I actually think he ends up being a closer, and just for the reasons you listed, I like so many arms in that system a lot better. So,
they have a lot of kids with upside in that system. They really do.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a nice job. I mean, they hire their scouts and they let them go do their work. I mean, they've done a nice job building that system. Now they just need to start winning games, you know, at the major league level. So, Well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, and we are a little off script here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about the Tiger system a little bit and your thoughts, you know, kind of just in general on the whole system, a couple of the big names that you like maybe besides Thompson, who you mentioned a minute ago.
Well, you know, unfortunately, Thompson was taken from me.
Did he go in the Texas deal?
Yeah, they mortgaged he and Knievel for Soria.
I thought so, but I didn't want to. The way you were talking, I didn't want to say that.
Yeah, you're looking at a pretty barren system at this point. Frankly, they you know, the two guys that I really liked from the beginning of the year were Thompson and Willie Adames, who went to Tampa in the David Price deal. You know, I actually saw Adames' first, you know, kind of backfield at bat because he had just come over. He played in the Dominican Summer League last year. He's Venezuelan. But, you know, I saw basically his first appearance stateside this year, and I really liked him. I wrote about him in the spring. And, you know, what happened was they actually had an injury at West Michigan, which is their low-A team. And they brought Adames up, I think, you know, to just kind of play for maybe a week or so while this guy healed. And he just mashed. And, you know, he was one of the best hitters in the Midwest League this year. And, you know, when it came time to, you know, push the chips into the trade deadline, as the Tigers always do, that was one of the pieces that Tampa wanted. And, you know, while I like him, you know, quite a bit as a player, I think that David Price is plenty good himself, so I do not really have any qualms about that. But in general, you know, the Tiger system is way down. I mean, you're looking at, you know, a top 10 of a lot of guys that people frankly haven't heard of. I mean, you're going to probably see guys like, you know, Edgar De La Rosa in the top 10, who probably in the top 30 in any other system. Devin Travis, who is a potential, you know, kind of second division, second baseman, who, you know, they're moving out to center field because they've got Kinsler and Hernan Perez.
Great college player, though.
What was that?
He was a great college player, though.
Yes, he was, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's you know, he's not a super, you know, quick athlete. He's honestly, he's got, you know, 35 or 40 speed. He can hit a little bit, but, you know, there's not much power projection. And, you know, it's kind of just an empty 270, 280 with, you know, 8 to 10 bombs type profile with fringe average glove in the field. So it's not really anything to get too excited about. The aforementioned Stephen Moya, who, you know, is kind of taking the or took, I guess, the Eastern League by storm this year. He hit like a billion homers, but at the same time, he walked, I think, 17 times in 500 plate appearances, something like that, and struck out about 150.
Yeah, there's a lot of swing and miss.
Yes, there is, and he's 6'8", and he weighs, probably 260 pounds. So, he basically looks like a giant Adonis. But, the swing is long, and frankly, I'm trying to think of, a player who has this kind of profile who has ever, really made it in the last, maybe 30 years or so. And the only one I can really think of is Dave Parker, and
yeah, that's a good call.
I think it's going to be Dave Parker. So,
yeah, he's built like a fatter Richie Sexton.
Yep, but, Richie Sexton also, didn't have to play the outfield every day.
And had a smallish swing for a big guy. He had a pretty short swing for a big guy.
And his plate discipline was far, far better than Moya's. Moya is a guy who walks 4% of the time. So, that isn't going for him either. I think that big league pitchers are, going to absolutely destroy him. I think he's a guy who could come, either off the bench or, maybe the first go around through the league, hit some bombs, kind of like what Junior Lake did. But once they figure him out, it's not going to be pretty, especially against left-handed pitching. I don't think he's going to be able to hang in there against them either.
Yeah, no, that's a great call. Are you a Suarez guy? Before I let you go.
Yes, I do like Suarez actually quite a bit. I've had him over Hernan Perez for quite some time, and I'm not sure if he is a big league shortstop every day. I think that he's probably more of a second division type profile. If he is going to be an everyday player, it's probably going to be 250 with between 8% and 10% walks, and maybe average to a little bit below average defense. But I think that he did a pretty good job filling in this year for Iglesias. And, I think that he has the athleticism to play potentially a little bit in the outfield and then, second, third, a little bit of short and kind of be a valuable utility player for the Tigers going forward.
Yeah, I saw him at Erie this year playing against Bowie, and I was impressed by him. He had a little thump in the bat, too. He took somebody just for a monster shot to left field.
So. Yeah, he's kind of an annoying player, if you know what I mean. He's the kind of guy who's a little bit pesky, and he'll get a big hit when you need it, and he'll draw a walk or put together a string of pretty good plate appearances. So it's a guy that I think is a valuable piece to a winning team. I don't think that he's necessarily a core play.
Yeah, the name that just jumped out to me was Joe Panik. Is somebody that he reminds me of a little bit. Obviously a different player, but same type of player, valuable player on a good team, can get you a hit every once in a while.
Yep.
So, before I let you go, Jordan, I do want to see, you mentioned Jason Parks earlier in the episode, RIP. I did want to see if you have any good Jason Parks stories that are somewhat suitable to tell on the air.
Oh, man, I wish I had anything that was... that was good to tell on the air. I think that, one of my favorite Park stories is, when myself, he and Mike Farron were in Milwaukee this past year for an event. We had a bunch of BP people there, and we went over to a bar, and we were all enjoying a few adult beverages. And for whatever reason, it was a bar that I think it's called the Safe House in Milwaukee, and they kind of put you on closed caption TV, throughout the entire bar, and they make you dance to like get into the bar. And,
oh God!
At 1 a.m. we were all like doing kick lines and stuff together, so that was pretty special.
Oh wow! I would like to see Farron and Parks doing a kick line along with yourself. That would definitely be a YouTube clip worth tweeting out. That's for sure. So, well, Jordan, thank you much for sharing so much time with me today. I appreciate it. If I could just, I'd love to give you a spot here for to plug your work, whether it's at BP, your Twitter, whatever you want to plug here.
Sure. So you can follow me on the Twitter machine at JGoro8. And, if you're for some reason a masochist and you enjoy Tigers prospects, which, they have Derek Hill, who's pretty good, and other than that,
Derek Hill.
Yes. you can follow me at Tigers Prospects on the Twitter machine. So I have those two Twitter accounts. And you can read my work at BP. I will be participating in the Hot Stuff scouting reports that are coming out. I've got two guys, James Shields and Melvi Cabrera. You know, I'm writing three under 25s, so you can read those on, you know, when the top 10s come out, those are attached. And in general, I'll be participating, you know, with all the top 10 discussions, actually for every team, coming out here starting pretty soon. So, you know, you'll see some of my influence there. And, you know, I really appreciate you for having me on today, and hope that we can do this again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a treat. And like I said, it was great meeting you in D.C. in June, and I hope to buy you a beer here sometime in the future.
Definitely, man.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks.
And that was my conversation with Baseball Prospectus's Jordan Gorash. Definitely give him a follow on Twitter at jgoro8. He's definitely, like I said earlier, one of the best talent evaluators out there right now, and he knows prospects as well as anybody out there, so definitely give him a follow. And before I finish episode 18, I want to remind everyone that the Nats GM Show is now available on iTunes, so I encourage everyone to please rate and review the show, as this helps us attract more listeners. Please, please, please. In addition, I should mention that we are seeking a sponsor or sponsors for this show. So if you or anyone you know is interested in sponsoring any portion of this podcast, please check natsgm.com for details. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.